Hello, and welcome to the Zenith Bank PLC H1 2019 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Mr. Ebenezer Onyekwu, CEO. Please go ahead with your meeting.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ebenezer Onyekwu, the Group Managing Director of Zenith Bank. I welcome you all to this maiden investor conference since my appointment and assumption of the role of the CEO of Zenith Bank. I also like to introduce my colleagues who are on this call with me. I have Dennis Olisah, Executive Director, Tope Fashoranti, Executive Director, Felix Egbon, Head of Risk Management, Mukhtar Adam, our CFO, and Taye Ayedebu, the Investor Relations Officer. The reports of our presentation have already been forwarded earlier, but however, I'd like to draw attention to some of the key highlights with respect to our operating environment and also the regulatory environment. We've seen in the regulatory environment, the CBN lower cap of 60% on loan-to-deposit ratio for commercial banks in Nigeria. CBN has equally muted the idea of a recapitalization of commercial banks, but the details of this are yet to be communicated. Additionally, CBN bars interest payment on bank deposit at the standing deposit facility exceeding $2 billion. In terms of the economic highlights, it's also important to point out the key issues as follows. GDP as at end of 2018 was at 2.4%, while in first quarter 2019, GDP tracked 2.01%. We've also seen inflation rates moderate downwards a bit from 11.37% in January 2019 to about 11.08% in July. The TB's rate, we've also witnessed a decline in the yield environment. As at end of January, average yield was about 17.6%, and this has steadily gone down to about 12.5% as at the month of July. In terms of foreign exchange reserves of the country, we've seen this move from $42.5 billion in January 2019. We've noticed some positive accretion with the figures as at June 2019 at $45 billion. CBN has equally adjusted MPR from 14% to 13.5% at the meeting of the MPC meeting of March 2019. In terms of our performance highlights, we would like to report that in spite of the headwinds in the operating environment, our gross earning was up by 2.9% year-on-year from 322.2 billion to 331.6 billion. PBT was also up by 4% year-on-year from 107.4 billion to 111.7 billion. Deposits also grew by 3.2% from 3.69 trillion to 3.81 trillion. Non-interest income came up by 24% year-on-year from 88.6 billion to 109.7 billion. On the back of this is the very significant improvement we recorded on the fees and electronic products that came in with a growth of 170% from 10.1 billion in 2018 to 27.1 billion. And this is driven largely by our retail expansion. We've also seen retail deposits now accounting for 29.3% of total deposits as against 23% as at end of December 2018. Retail loans has also inched up from 1.5% as at December 2018 to 2.4% as at end of June. Return on equity on Zenith based on the current price of Zenith as at now stands, return on equity is 21%. Then in terms of dividend yield, based on our current price, is currently at about 16%, which makes Zenit a very, very compelling investment proposition for discerning investors. Then in terms of growth in customer base, we've also witnessed improvement, which is growing steadily. So I welcome everybody to the conference, and we can now go straight to the Q&A. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will just be a brief pause while any questions are being registered. And our first question comes from the line of Toya Sioni from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello?
Please go ahead.
Okay, hi, good afternoon, and thank you very much for taking my question. My first question is on asset quality trends at the bank. So we noticed that there was some uptick in absolute NPLs.
Can you speak up a bit? We can hardly hear you.
Hello, can you hear me now?
It's better.
Okay, so my first question is on asset quality trends at the bank. So we noticed that absolute impairments picked up in 2Q, and we're just wondering why, and if you could also speak on the general asset quality trends at the bank to help us understand the drivers better. My second question is on the NIM trends at the bank. So we noticed some volatility this quarter where interest income came off quite a bit, and there was a spike in NIR. So if you could just help us understand the earnings drivers a bit better. And my final question is on your non-interest revenue line. So we saw that there was significant growth in the fees and commissions on electronic products. So if you could just speak on how sustainable this is and if we can continue with this run rate for the rest of the year. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I think I will start from the last question in terms of the non-interest revenue line. Yes, we recorded significant improvement. Our expectation is that we'll continue to intensify our retail drive. What you see is a reflection of the drive we have in the retail banking initiative. We think the opportunities exist for us to do a lot more, because if you go by the BVM report, the total number of bankable adults in the country is 110 million. Out of which total number of adults that have bank account currently stands at 38 million, which means we still have huge potentials in the market. And one of the reasons we also believe that we should be able to grow that business is because of the strong capability we have built into the retail banking process in terms of the electronic platform. Our platform are efficient, and the rate at which we are onboarding customers is also growing astronomically. So our expectation is that we'll continue to see that line grow steadily. In terms of the question on the asset quality trend, what we've done is that we are typically, as an institution, we are very conservative. And as a result, what we've seen as improvement was just, put it this way, just provisions we made across the line in order to ensure that we take adequate caution in terms of the quality of our risk asset. We don't have, in absolute term, any deterioration in the asset quality. Then for the trend, the NIM trend in terms of income, I think that's the second question. You talked about, you want to know what we've done, that interest income increased. I think on the whole, in terms of interest income, there was a drop. It didn't really increase. But what we see that the key driver of our business is essentially volume. And within the period from January to June, we've also witnessed a declining yield environment. We'll continue to keep our eyes on it and make sure that our margins are not terribly compressed. So we make steady efforts to ensure that we reprice our deposits. The other issue that is helping us in this respect is the fact that the growing proportion of the retail deposit, which is much more stickier, is helping us to moderate the interest expense lower. We expect that this trend will continue, and we should be able to maintain a decent level of performance across all the income lines.
Okay, so I'm just
Next
going qu- to... Hello?
Yes.
Okay, so I just wanted to ask a follow-up question on the impairment charges that you took during the year. So I can see that your guidance for cost of risk is 1% for 2019, and it's currently at 1.4. So I wanted to ask why that wasn't revised upwards if we look at the trend that the bank is following. And I just wanted to pick a bit more on the interest income. So that line actually decreased. So I just wanted to understand better why there was a particular dip in NIM in 2Q as opposed to the previous quarters. I understand that that yields are trending downwards, but it was quite sharp. It was quite a sharp decline, especially when you compare across pairs. So I just wanted to better understand what was happening with that line. Thank you.
Thank you very much, TLC. My name is Mukhtar Adam. In impairment charges, yeah, we give guidance of 1% for cost of risk. Now we are 1.4. We are maintaining our guidance because we believe that the provision, the impairment charges we have taken, is more than adequate to carry us to the rest of the year. And then as our loan book grows, because we are keeping the guidance for the growth in loan book, as the loan book grows, it will moderate the cost of risk, which will end up around 1% that we have guided. So that's why we are keeping the guidance. And we're optimistic that close of the year, we'll be able to achieve that 1% cost of risk as we guided. Then in terms of interest that dropped in Q2, remember that in last year, some of the instruments that we moved into the current year had higher yields, okay? So Q1 inherited some instrument from last year, financial year, that had higher yields that came into Q1. But when those ones mature and you roll over, you roll them over at lower yields. So the yield in Q2 standalone was very, very low. That's why you are seeing a drop in that interest income. But again, you also have to look at how we have also managed our interest expense within that Q2. As the MD said, we are watching both interest expense and interest income so we don't lose too much on the margin. We believe that we are going to have better yield in the third quarter and fourth quarter as the yield environment is improving now.
Okay, thank you very much, Mukhtar. And just my final question would be, what is your net long dollar position and how much do you have in swaps currently outstanding?
Total swap balance is $1.6 billion. That's the nominal value. Yeah.
Thank you.
So that was the second question.
What was the second question?
So your net long position.
Long position. Our net long position is about $300 million.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Karim Avadir from FM Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking the call. Just a couple of questions, one of them regarding asset quality. So if you take a look at the notes, you wrote off quite a significant amount of your loan book, I think around 3% of the loan book. So can you just give us color on is this a strategy to clean up the book? Should we expect more write-offs going forward? And then just going into 2020, the lower growth profile, what kind of trends are you seeing in terms of your NPLs for yourself and for other banks in Nigeria? And then my second question is in regards to the interest income. If you take a look at interest coming from your T-bills, the yield has shrunk significantly in Q2. And it seems that some of that income has transitioned into trading gains, if I take a look. So could you please comment on that as well? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. The question in terms of asset quality, you talked about, you want to know understanding in terms of the write-off. Well, usually once you've provided for a facility for over 1 year and you fully provided, you are allowed to write off the loan. But however, that doesn't foreclose the follow-up in terms of recovery. And we don't expect that we are going to be having quite a huge write-off in terms of what we have. Our NPL in absolute terms, we don't expect it to deteriorate because we are keeping a close eye in terms of the asset quality. What we expect to see is that the NPL level will continue to trend downwards. In terms of interest income transitioning into trading gains, we are in the business of intermediation, and we keep our eyes open looking for areas of opportunities. It depends on what happens. When there is a dislocation from one aspect of the business, from one segment, it could be throwing up opportunities elsewhere. All we need to do, we continue to do, is intelligently monitor and review the markets and the environment to see where we can effectively deploy our resources in order to maximize our efforts. So that's essentially what we continue to do. We don't know the direction yield will go, but whatever happens, all we will do is ensure that we remain very, very articulate in terms of how we build our scenarios so that we are not taken unaware. But we are equal to the task in terms of treasury management. We have very profound skills in treasury management, and we have our eyes on the ball.
Yeah, sure. Sorry. But just can you please just, in more specific detail, just explain why the T-bill yields have come down significantly? If I annualize the T-bill yield, I have sub 4%. So I just wanted to understand, is there any movement from interest income into T-bill trading gains that occurred in the quarter?
Well, like we rightly pointed out, at the beginning of January, the average yield was 17.6%. But as at end of June, it has trended downwards to 13%. And within that period, within the first quarter, the average yield was trending downwards to 14%. So what we've seen is that within this period, we've seen a steady decline in the yield environment. So that is primarily what affected the returns in terms of what we have in T-bills. And like I mentioned earlier, we are not, T-bills is not only the income line we look at. We look at generally the broad opportunities in the environment. And however, even as the T-bills income is trending downwards, it puts us in a position where we also need to monitor and make sure that our cost of funds are appropriately repriced to ensure that we balance the margins that we realize from our treasury activities.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Tunde Abidoye from FBNQuest. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my questions. So just taking you back a bit. Now, if I look at your e-banking income, it contributed around 18 billion to non-interest income in Q2. That's from around 9 billion in Q1. Can you just provide some color as to how we should be thinking of this line going forward? Because that growth was just too strong. Then I want to know, still on your asset quality, what's driving the spike in NPL for the communication and consumer credit sectors? It appears that you reclassified some of the exposures in these sectors. Also, you took a significant write-off of about 60 billion. Are these write-offs behind the decline seen in the real estate and construction sectors of your loan book? How good are your recovery prospects going forward? That's all for now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tunde. In terms of e-banking income, what you see is a reflection of the steady progress and intensity we have in the retail banking initiative. And are we going to slow down? The answer is no. Instead, what we are seeing is we'll continue to steadily build momentum. the Zenith brand in the retail space has been very well received because to quite a number of customers, Zenith is like an aspirational brand. So given what we have and the strong capability we have in digital platforms, we expect that we should be able to sustain the growth trajectory that we have in the electronic banking space. We are steadily coming up with new products. The whole idea for us is to ensure that we trace, we use our digital platform to transform the financial lives of customers, looking at lifestyle and ensure that end-to-end, we capture everything that has to do with intermediation in the value chain of all our customers. I'll get Felix to answer the question on the asset quality and write-off. Felix.
Good afternoon. My name is Felix Abram. On the asset quality and write-offs, if you look at the migration from manufacturing across the corresponding periods from 2018 to 2019 and in comparison with what happens in consumer credit, it's just an issue of reclassification. There were some key deals because of how they were tied to the principals were classified under manufacturing, while in truth they were trading companies and they were more like individuals trading with those big multinationals. So they had to be reclassified to the appropriate sector where they belonged. So they were moved from actual manufacturing into consumer credit.
So essentially what we've done there is if before now, consumer and retail loan wasn't part of our segment. But when we created that segment, we had to do a reclassification. So what you have there are existing legacy NPL that existed under consumer, they existed under general commerce.
Yeah.
So we have now reclassified them and brought them to consumer and retail lending.
Okay, thank you. What about the telecom sector?
What's the question on telecom sector?
The spike in the communication NPL.
Okay. The telecom sector. Yeah, we have one major name that we have put in our NPL for the telecom sector. So that happened in Q2. That's what caused the spike. But that has been fully provided for. It's just moving it to NPL.
Okay, you had some write-offs for this sector as well, I believe.
Yeah, sure. We had write-offs, as you mentioned, up to 60 billion. Those are, again, loans that have been fully provided for the past 2-3 years that though we have written them off, but recovery effort is ongoing. We have recovered some as well during the period, and we hope we are going to recover more and more. Yes, the write-off was not a single sector. It's cut across different sectors, actually.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Ola Waikuru from FBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you very much for the call. I wanted to ask, so looking at the breakdown of loans, you have SME and commercial loans lumped together as 18.6%. I wanted to know how much of that is being driven by the SME sector. Then also looking at the loan-to-deposit ratio, so given the gross loan figure and deposit figure in the presentation, we get that 51%, which is the group figure. I was wondering if it's possible to share the gross loan figure for bank and deposit as well for bank, just so we can see how, you know, the 62.7% was arrived at. And also just out of curiosity, speaking about the retail segment, so given that there's plans to grow the contribution of retail deposits and loans to the business, what's the ideal mix from a strategic perspective? Thank you.
Thank you very much. The first question in terms of the loan breakdown, SME accounting for 18%, the first thing to notice is that, in general, in terms of retail loan, as a proportion to the loan book, as at end of December, we recorded 1.5%. But as at end of June this year, we have seen that grow up to 2.4%. The expectation is that the figure will continue to go higher as we intensify our retail drive in terms of deposit and loan creation. There are quite a lot of opportunities for us to expand the retail loan book, given the initiative and incentive from CBN, especially with respect to the intervention loan scheme for the creative sector and also the medium and SME loan incentive schemes that are in place. For the loan-to-deposit ratio, yes, for the bank as a standalone, as at end of June, what we have there is 62.7, but as a group, we have 51. We also like to say this with a caution that if the conversation from the CBN is that we are looking at loan-to-deposit ratio for the bank, 62% will say yes, our head is clearly above water. But if it's about loan-to-funding ratio, it will become something completely different from what we are looking at. But based on the conventional loan-to-deposit ratio for the bank, it's 62%. Then retail deposits too. In terms of retail deposits, we expect that it will continue to grow. As it grows, the proportion of retail deposits to overall deposits we have in the bank, we also expect that that will grow. But right now, retail deposits as a percentage of our total deposit is 29.3%, as against 23% in December. So hopefully we expect that it will continue to grow up. And if you are asking for where we expect it to be, I think for me, we'll be looking at nothing less than 40%, you know.
Thank you. I just wanted to go back to the question on the commercial and SME sector. So I see the retail portion, which is now 2.4%, but I was more curious about the segment that 18.6%, which is SME and commercial. So I wanted to know how much of that is strictly SME.
So that's how much of the retail, what we have is SME.
Yes, so... Yeah, so outside of corporate, outside of retail, there's a lumping of commercial and SME. So I wanted to know which is 18.6. So how much of that 18.6 is driven by SME?
Okay, in terms of commercial and the SMEs,
yes.
I would say that of that, if you look at the SME, if we work out the total proportion we have as 2.5%, I mean currently at 2.4%, I think we should be looking at this. We'll have a guidance of around, out of that, we'll say about 60% of that are being, 40% of that are being driven by SMEs.
Okay.
Also note that what constitutes SMEs for us, essentially, we have a strategy to follow the chain of any sector we deal with or any principal we deal with. So most of the key distributor schemes that we use for collections and all that actually comes under the categorization as SMEs for us. So that, like the MD said, that will constitute about 40% of that percentage of 18.6 that you find in the mix between commercial and SMEs.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Rona Gardia from FEFG. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for your time and taking my question. My first question is really is just a follow-up of what Karim was asking a little earlier, which is to do with your margins. Now, I understand T-bill yields declined significantly since the start of the year, but if I look at the effective T-bill yield that you earned over the quarter, so just over the three-month period, by my estimates, that was about 5.8%. And that's significantly lower than what the T-bill yields were offering during that period. So could you help us reconcile why your T-bill yield was so low during that period and what we should expect through the rest of the year? So that's my first question. My second question is to do on your, is with your restructured portfolio. I see almost 12 to 13% of your loans are still under restructuring category. Could you outline what the performance of that loan book is, especially given the recent decline in oil prices, as well as the discussion around the nationalization of power sector assets that's been muted recently? And my third question is on your capital. Your fully adopted IFRS 9 capital adequacy ratio is around 21%. You still have a very healthy buffer. So could you share your thoughts of what you might be thinking about in terms of how to deploy the excess capital, be it in the form of extra dividends or some sort of acquisition? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. For the question on the margin, in terms of what we earn in the second quarter, if you look at the loan growth too, you will realize that within the second quarter of this year, you will see an appreciable improvement in terms of loan growth when compared to Q1. Essentially, what we did was to ensure that we beef up the loan book in order to ensure that we achieve the 60% minimum requirement by CBN, and also as a way of also growing the business beyond what we were before. So that was a case of us balancing the requirements we needed to fulfill in terms of our returns, because with margins dropping, the other option for us was to look for a more higher returns sources for deploying our liquidity. So the loan was a good opportunity for us. Question
Sorry, on that, I mean, the loan book grew virtually just by 1% Q and Q. You know, there wasn't a significant shift from T-bills to loans. So, again, it's difficult to understand how you could achieve a yield of 6% in a market where T-bills are averaging between 12 and 14%, even if you consider the shift.
Well, if you look at it again, remember that we have our deposits. You go into contractual obligation with the depositors depending on the tenor. Even as yield is dropping, you don't have the opportunity of repricing midway. So you get caught in between. There is a transition period you will have to go through, especially when you see a downward spike in yield. So while the yield goes down immediately, you don't have the opportunity almost immediately to reprice your deposit in order to align with the drop in the yield. So that is part of what you will see there.
I get that. And therefore, maybe the margins will improve through the rest of the year as you reprice your deposits. What I'm trying to understand is just why the absolute yield was so low during the second quarter.
Yes, in an environment where you see the yield declining, and also bear in mind that within this second, within this period, we've also witnessed a situation where there were no the opportunities for investment in government instruments were limited because of the direction of the central bank. So the opportunities were not there like we had in the first quarter. So what that meant was that we had a situation where we had to think of other ways of deploying our resources. So that impacted on us, and at the same time, like I mentioned, the cost of contractual deposit that span across the Q2 period that we entered into in Q1 also had its own effect in terms of the cost implication. Over the period as we go on into Q3 and Q4, we are going to see a moderation that will bring about improvement in terms of our returns on the T-bills. Then for capital, yes, it's always been a deliberate thing for us to maintain very healthy buffer, and that will continue. We'll continue to reward our shareholders the way we've always done in terms of dividend payment. Then in terms of acquisition, the first thing is that we continue to grow organically. But if we find anything attractive in the market that is in line with our strategic imperative, we will look at it. But we will not go out inordinately to seek for acquisition. But if you find something that is quite attractive and really fits the kind of profile of the investment we'll do, we will consider.
Okay. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Dennis Olisa. I'll take the question on the restructure in our portfolio, loan portfolio. Essentially, what has happened is that since after the crash in oil prices of 2014-2015, gradually oil prices have picked up, and operators in this sector have come round to sit with us again and look at their loan portfolio with us. Through deliberate interaction with them, we've come to do some kind of right sizing, not only of the loan value, but also the tenor of those loans. And as we speak, quite a number of them have been restructured. And because they have been restructured, that is essentially extending the tenor of the loans, we've come to realize that a good number of them are performing. And we don't have any doubt that this particular trend will continue. And that thing we have done in recent times, especially as far as oil prices are concerned, is that we've deliberately introduced hedges. And we've taken out insurance to hedge on certain prices. And when prices go below that, we get well compensated by the hedge providers. For power, the sector is still challenged, but we are working with a good number of them. Don't forget that there are basically three subsectors here. We are talking about the generation, the distribution, as well as the transmission. In the generation aspect, most of our players that we worked with, their assets are doing very, very well. In the distribution, quite a few of them have issues. And like I said, we have restructured them. We've sat with them, and a few of them have also introduced consultants. We're also helping them calibrate not only their revenue, but also their operations. So things are picking up very well. On the issues raised by government as to their intervention in that sector, we are keeping a very close eye on that. We are also working with some interested stakeholders, both from the government side as well as the private sector side, to see how, at any point in time, the interest of the bank will continually be protected. But as things stand now, we've taken adequate protection to ensure that the bank's loan books are not unduly affected. Thank you.
Okay. Mokhtar here. I need to clarify something. If you're looking at the yield on our treasury bills, please also note that the total treasury bills, part of the income in the treasury bills is sitting in the trading treasury bills. The part of the income is there. Part is in interest income. So if you're taking the total treasury bills we are holding, then you need to bring the two incomes together. Probably that will help your analysis better.
Okay.
You also realize that our trading treasury bills holding increased in Q2.
Right, right.
Thank you.
And that's to do with the derivative portfolio, or that was just a separate decision?
We have a derivative portfolio, and we have trading treasury bills. We hold treasury bills for trading, and we hold some to maturity. So if you put the two together, it will you would have a better understanding of what is happening.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
And the next question comes from the line of Jerry Nwabuye from Cardinal Stone. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon. I think some of my questions have been answered already, but just for clarity, I want to ask regarding your loan growth. So I see you're down 3% year to date, and you're guiding it towards loan growth this year. So I'd like to know what strategies you want to employ towards this that will make us see something different compared to last year, because last year you also guided towards loan growth, but we didn't see that. Secondly, also on the T-bills trading, so in Q2, like you mentioned, I mean, we saw a spike in that. I'd like to know if it's something that is likely to repeat. I mean, you know, maybe you took advantage of certain opportunities in the market, but then again, do we expect to see that play out in subsequent quarters? And on your exposure to the consumer credit space, yeah, I know you said, or maybe if I'm wrong, correct me, you said you reclassified some of those general commerce into consumer credit. I'd like to know, on consumer credit alone, should we be worried about, because I see the NPLs increased, know, from full year to H119, I see that NPLs increased to about 8% of total loan book from about 1% as at full year 19. So any worries in that particular area, especially given that the CBN is pushing towards more, you know, lending in that space? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You are right in terms of loan growth that if you look at our performance last year, there was a decline in terms of the loan book. But however, if you compare our Q2 result with our Q1 result, you'll see an increase. Our expectation is that we'll continue to grow in terms of the loan book, and opportunities abound in our Greek. Opportunities abound in the creative sector, the retail and SME lending space, a number of incentive schemes, the discounted, the differentiated credit reserve lending that introduced by CBN, which is providing a huge platform for the REIT sector to expand and upgrade their manufacturing facilities. So we see a huge space there. Bear in mind that Zenith Bank remains a corporate, our hold in the corporate end still remains very strong. That we are looking at retail doesn't mean we are releasing our grip in the corporate. We are, in fact, intensifying our grip in the corporate, and we have a continued dedicated team that focus, that will continue to focus on the corporate, while another set of team are focusing on the retail. That way, we'll be able to advance our interest and increase our market share from the two critical segments of the market. So to answer your question, the expectation is that the loan growth will continue to grow. Then for...
So I wanted to ask, any idea what it is currently, I mean, from H119? So I noticed by then it was down 3%, but any idea what it is currently? Because we're already 2 months into the new quarter, so if you can give us an estimate, basically.
Well, in terms of where we are, compared to what we ended with, we have also improved. We've improved significantly, much beyond where we closed the quarter with. That I can tell you. The expectation is that in Q3, in terms of the amount of loan disbursed, we would do better than what we did in Q2. And if I look at the pipeline of projects and opportunities we have, the same trend should be maintained in Q4. The deep pocket is there. The liquidity is there. Our ratios are quite strong and robust. So we don't have what we call limitation that will stop us. The only thing that will limit us will be lack of opportunities. But then, if you are in a kind of position where you have the resources, you can play deeply in the market. So we are able to play in the market and ensure that not only do we retain our market share, we win incremental market share. For exposure to consumer lending space, what you see there, like we pointed out before, was just a case of classification. We had what you had before under our consumer banking. We never created the segment for retail and consumer. So what we've done now, since retail has become a critical segment for us, we created that segment and now move what we had before under the consumer lending, that belong to the same category of SME, we put them there. It's not as a result of a deterioration coming from new retail loans we booked. And again, it's also important to let the investors know that our approach to retail is going to be driven by the same approach we've in terms of lending to retail, will be driven by the same approach we've always had in the corporate end of the market. We will continue to choose and pick. We will never be reckless. It is not a do or die. We are not desperate, but we will be out looking for the right and the best type of deals. Again, it's important to let the market know that the introduction of the BVN has also provided a reasonable level, is providing reasonable level of comfort and control in terms of the loan growth to the retail segment. The BVN, there is the capability being built into the BVN such that if you have a retail loan defaulter who gets delinquent in one bank and decides to go to Bank B and abandon his loan in Bank A, once the BVN is shortlisted in the portal, electronically, the BVN
the system will hunt the BVN, and whichever bank where it has money, it will recover it and repay the bank where the delinquent loan exists. Beyond that, even after the recovery, you, the recalcitrant borrower, will be blacklisted from having a bank account in the country. So we believe that will provide reasonable guidance for the industry to ensure that we don't see the incidence of the recreation of bad loans in the retail segment. But even at that, Zenith, we are disciplined, we are cautious, we are conservative, we will continue to uphold those strong values. We stay true to our values when it comes to loan creation. So we don't think our foray into retail will change because we are now doing retail. Instead, we will define the same value, the same discipline. If it doesn't make sense, no matter how much money you make, it doesn't make sense at all, and it will not be worth our while completely.
Okay. On your question on trading treasury bills, whether we expect growth or not, we have to mention here that trading book by its nature is not something that you make the income and you amortize. It's subject to market variables. You carry them at fair value. Okay, so that is what drives the income. What we do as a bank, we keep exploring opportunities in the market. So come Q3, Q4, if there are still opportunities for us to grow that line, we'll definitely grow them. If there are no opportunities to grow that line, the resources that we have, we redeploy them into other places to grow that line. As the MD mentioned, we are growing the loan book. So even if you see a drop in this line of income, then I can assure you that you will see a compensating growth or a more than compensating growth in another line of income. That's what we can, that's the assurance we can give you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And finally, just one last question. I know the whole talk about the CBN wanting to place a cap on banks' exposure to treasury securities is a bit low right now, but is there a world where you see that happening? And if that's the case, what kind of strategies are you going to employ, you know, to be able to mitigate against potential risks from, you know, from that, basically?
Well, we're in the intermediation business. Like it's generally said, when one road closes, another one opens. If the opportunities are not there, we'll create it. We have a talented pool of team, but our team is so talented that product development and innovation is part of us. If that if CBN forecloses that, certainly we'll find other means of deploying our liquidity. We don't see that as a threat. We see that as a challenge to be more creative and innovative to generate other niche opportunities and segments in the market. It's a huge market we have in the country. So we can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. There are so many things that we think will drive new opportunities. There is the emerging urbanization going on. The retail space is opening up. Even from what we can do in the retail, it can also help to increase the level of the performance of the GDP. There's a huge opportunity. The economy is not on a lockdown. So we don't see that as a restraint to us growing our business. Whatever happens, we take it on.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Tolu Olumeto from Telmed. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call. And apologies, I joined the call late, so I guess it's possible that some people have asked these questions. The first question is just on the opportunities that you see in retail banking. I know someone asked about potential M&A, but I wanted to ask specifically whether you would consider boosting your retail business by looking at retail-focused lenders and whether you see any domestic lenders as interesting in terms of acquisitions at the moment. And linked to that, do you think it's important for Zenith to remain one of the largest banks in Nigeria, or is that not a focus? The second question is about the restructured loans, which I think you discussed earlier. Can you maybe remind us of the oil price at which you have restructured or renegotiated those loans? third question is also about the oil sector, specifically about oil importers. Can you give us an update on your on what your exposure is and on the discussions that we heard about before regarding the government maybe stepping in to help the borrowers in that sector? And finally, on foreign currency loan growth, I just wanted to ask if Zenith has participated in any of the recent syndications that we've seen talked about, like Seplat and others in upstream oil and gas. And can you maybe update us on your current foreign currency position and whether you would consider returning to the bond market? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. In terms of opportunity in retail banking, the way we see the retail banking space is a huge pie. And there's enough to accommodate, but not just accommodate. We want to take a very dominating position in that space. Our whole objective is the same way we have taken a leading position in the corporate. We want to replicate that in the retail. That's the minimum for us. And opportunity to acquire any of the retail lenders. First is that we'll continue to remain an organic. That's primarily our goal, to grow organically. If we find anything that is strategically relevant and will add reasonable value to us, we will look at it. We will not just do acquisition for the sake of the hubris of doing it. We'll do it for the sake that there's money to be made. There's incremental value. We won't do it for cosmetic reasons. And again, you talked about the fact that Zenith being the largest bank, there's a pecking order where we stand, and we want to defend that. That's the legacy passed on to us by our leaders. It can't be that under this escorting led by me, that we have a dilution. No. The whole essence is to project and maintain our leading position in the market. No matter the condition, no matter what happens, we will dig in. We will do the hard pulling and ensure that we maintain our prime position in the market. I will get Dennis to speak on the oil sector and the SEY loan growth.
Truth be told, we worked with a lot of consultants, some of them well-renowned, on determining the hedge numbers. So as a strategy of the bank, I don't want to release it here, but I can tell you that the figures that we took, they are reasonable, and they come from very, very good sources. Most of them, if I mention their names, you'll appreciate the fact that their advice is worth taking. We've done that. On the issue of our exposure to the downstream oil and gas business, the CBN intervened, and then they issued promissory notes, which sovereign notes, which we have already discounted for a good number of them. But the only thing is that those sovereign notes were issued at zero discount. So the coupon is just zero. So we've taken the losses into our books, and all of them have been actually provided for. We're just waiting for the maturity of those notes, and then we just use it to net off the loans that they are issued against. On our FCY loans for upstream business, yes, there are huge opportunities, true. I'm sure you are aware that NLNG is also in the market looking for funding right now. It's something our credit committee has considered, and not only considered, but considered positively. We are going to partake in that. There is one coming up being put together by Chevron. There's another one being put together by Mobil. So these are areas. These are areas where we think opportunities exist, and then we will participate in them. I don't think there's any fear in that regard.
Okay, just for clarity, let me clarify more in terms of the downstream oil importers. We've received a promissory note, like Dennis mentioned, and the CBN has said discount at zero, that's discount at no cost to the importers. We are also made to write off interest that accrued from July 2016 to end of December 2018. But interestingly for Zenith, when we saw that that sector was challenged, what we did was to suspend interest recognition. So in terms of what the interest reversal that we've taken, they are just negligible. So what we have, we've received the first set of promissory notes, and we've applied them and effected the recoveries. What we have as standing now in the books, they are just, in terms of exposure, is less than 30 billion, and we have the promissory notes that are dated end of 2020 that will now apply to effect recovery. So we don't expect, there's apart from the CBN write-off, we are not taking any impairment. So I would say that we are completely square in that space. He's talking about the loans and the syndication. Of course, the opportunities in the market, and given our position where we stand, there is no serious indication that comes up in the market that you will not find any being mentioned. So as the opportunities come, we will look at them and effectively participate in and see what share of the business we can get.
Your question on the FX market, whether we are going back to the bond market. You know, we have $1 billion bond project that we have issued almost, we took almost all the $1 billion. We've repaid $500 million. We have only $500 million running. As and when we have opportunities to go back, we will definitely go back. With the opportunities coming in the upstream oil and gas, and the rating, credit rating on us as an institution and on the bonds that we have in issue, the ratings are good enough to give us very good pricing. So if we see opportunity that our current liquidity cannot meet, we will go take those monies and take advantage of those opportunities. But you also have to look at our deposit. Our domiciliary deposit is also not doing too badly. So our dollar liquidity is also doing well for now to meet our needs. But if there's any need for us to go back, the program is already there. We will take advantage of that. But for now, we are not on the market.
Thank you very much. Just to follow up, can you maybe give us a figure for your foreign currency position? Are you long or short dollars at the moment, and by how much? Thank you.
We are long by about 300 million.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
And the next question comes from the line of Gareth Disser from Sustainable. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for the call. I just have two questions on the expense line. So the first is on the AMCON expense. I see year on year it's flat. And I know that you take the expense basically in the beginning of the year, then it sort of stays the same throughout the course of the year. But I just want to understand why it's flat year on year, considering if I use sort of total assets as a very crude measure, they've inched up over the period. So I would have expected the AMCON charge to inch up as well. And then lastly, on the compensation line, particularly the director's compensation, it's increased quite dramatically by about 1 billion naira year on year, and it's actually higher than where you guys were for the full year last year. I just want to understand why. Is it a timing thing, or what's going on there? Thank you.
Okay, Mukta, I'll take the two questions.
Okay, on the AMCON. You know, the formula for computing AMCON is defined. Okay, so it's just based on your balance sheet for the previous period, and then you would also add your off-balance sheet transactions that gives you the computation. So if you look at our balance sheet, year on year, we have not had significant growth. Though there is a growth, but the growth was not significant. That's number one. If you also look at our off-balance sheet, the gross amount has also dropped. So that's sort of compensated for the AMCON charge. So there is really nothing different on the AMCON, okay? Because if you have this huge AMCON charge, then we also have to be very careful of the off-balance sheet transactions that we take to be sure that the charge and the revenue we are making on them, we are able to make profits despite that. So that's what happened. In terms of directors' emolument, yes, you would have to, the group directors' emolument, we have directors that are outside the country. UK, our UK subsidiary has directors, our Ghana subsidiaries have directors. So sometimes you have the exchange rate effect affecting some of these directors' emolument. And also, directors' emolument is not necessarily flat. You have reviews in those emoluments, and then you also have number of the directors, board members also changing and increasing over time. But their growth to us, we don't think it's too significant. It's reasonable within our limits.
Yeah, let me also add to that that across the group, we've seen new directors being appointed across the different subsidiaries. So that also will have some impact in terms of the emolument. Next question.
Just as a reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. There will just be a further brief pause while any other questions are being registered. And the next question comes from the line of Timmy Ori from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good evening, sirs. This is Temi from HSBC. Thanks very much for hosting the call. My questions are mostly around the deposits and the bank's funding strategy. So it looks like you guys have been gathering domiciliary deposits quite aggressively. As a proportion of total deposits, they've increased from 17 to around 27% in 1 year. Is this primarily to ensure you can continue the swap trade with the central bank given you've rolled off your Eurobond, or is this primarily to fund foreign currency loans? Also, can you please give us a sense for the cost of these domiciliary deposits and what proportion is driven by corporates versus retail? And then what's the tenure of these dom deposits and how frequently are they repriced? Then also, has the central bank's appetite for the swap transactions increased recently given the scale of scheduled offshore maturities in the coming months? And then can you please remind us what the size of your swap portfolio is? And my final question relates to your loans. Term loans have declined from 70 to 65% year to date. Is it fair to assume that this reflects a decline in demand for CapEx borrowing? And if this is the case, when do you think CapEx lending will start to pick up materially? Thank you.
Thank you, Temi. First is that the down deposit you have largely is coming from improvement in the flows we are getting from most of our customers whose flows are in dollars. So I would say that it's largely corporate-led deposit, and not the retail portion of it is very, very insignificant. It's very, very insignificant. And in terms of pricing, average pricing of a dollar deposit, I'll put at an average of about maybe 2 to 3% in terms of what we have. And how often do we price it? It depends on the tenor of each of the deposit. There are different contracts. We have the deposits some for, you have some for 60 days, 90 days, 180 days, as the case may be. So it is priced as the maturities fall due or as new deposit contracts are being signed. In terms of our swap book, Mukta answered that earlier. Currently we have $1.6 billion. And the swap book is not strictly with CBN. We do with other counterparties. It depends on what opportunities we see in the market. Term loan, yes, we expect term loan, we expect growth. We expect growth because, like I mentioned earlier, the term loans that we see, what the opportunities there will come from customers who will be interested in assessing some of the CBN scheme because of the fact that they are long tenor, single digit. And beyond that, too, we've also seen a situation where in the last 5 years, most of the corporates haven't bothered in terms of expansion and upgrading their manufacturing facilities. So with a lot of improvement in technology, we are beginning to see a good number of them making inquiries and asking for RFP in terms of upgrade of their facilities. So over time, what do we see? We expect our response would be that we expect growth, although the growth will be muted. So that is why we're also careful in terms of the guidance we are giving on the loan growth.
But we will continue to work hard and ensure that we improve on that.
Thank you. All very helpful.
Yes.
And the next question comes from the line of Dinesh Renchard from Franklin Templeton. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Good day. Thank you for having this call. I've got three questions. The first one just comes back to sort of the yield and assets, and in particular just yield on loans and advances to customers. I compute in sort of an average rate of 12.7% coming down from 14.7% about a year ago. You know, you mentioned about lower yields on government bonds, and I understand that, but this is specifically looking at loans to customers. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, why that yield has shifted down so dramatically? My second question looks at your loan portfolio by segment. It does look like you have increased loans to the oil and gas segment and reduced loans in the manufacturing sector. So are you now becoming comfortable with loans to the oil and gas segment to start increasing loans again? And then the third one just sort of talks about your sort of e-banking income and fee income that you're getting from electronic or alternative channels. Just your thoughts on you know, if the PSB or payment service bank licenses were happen to be issued to the mobile companies, you know, do you foresee sort of a drop-off in digital revenue for the bank, you know, assuming that does come through?
Thank you very much. In terms of the yield on loans, if you realize that as the yield on treasury instrument was going down, it has a direct correlation with interest rate, which equally almost in a linear relation, has a linear relationship with the lending rate. We've also seen the key corporates asking for a reduction in the rate. Moreover, part of the growth you see in the loan has also come from the DCRRI. That's the DCRR. That is the cash reserve lending, which is at 9%. In terms of the growth we've seen in our loan, a significant portion of it has also come from DCRR price. Which comes in at 9%. So that also has an impact in terms of the yield you see on our loan book. But speaking essentially, because of competitive pressure, lending rate has come down. We noticed that lending rate started coming down in Q2. And because we needed to defend our position, we had to move in the direction of the market. We simply have to play the market. Then in terms of loan segment, I think Dennis will speak on that, but the critical thing is that loan to oil and gas hasn't really advanced. What you see is the fact that because the loan book has trended downwards and trending downwards more from other segments other than oil and gas, that gives oil and gas proportion a higher rate than it used to be. E-banking and fee income with respect to PSB and the implication for us, Tokwe will take that.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Tokwe. Well, we welcome competition from the PSBs. That's the business we are in, a very competitive environment. So we don't expect to panic. We will continue to offer to our customers the best of our services and to respond positively to the challenges that come with these PSBs. Our retail focus will continue. We see a very strong potential in the retail market, and we'll continue to replicate, you know, in retail all our achievements in the corporate sectors. So we don't see anything to, you know, worry about in respect of the PSBs. We'll compete and respond appropriately.
For the oil and gas bucket, as far as the loan portfolio is concerned, there has not been any new incremental in the recent past, at least within the quarter under review. Essentially, what has happened is that because of the shrinkage in the total loan books, the oil and gas one that has not shrunk suddenly stands out as if it's increasing. there's really been no incremental, at least within this quarter. But will there be increase as we progress down to the end of 2019? The answer, I believe, is yes.
Okay. I'm just looking at the – so just on that oil and gas loans, it does look like there was some movement, you know, within the last two quarters from 510 billion to 540 billion. Did that all happen in the first quarter, I assume, then? Is that what you're saying?
I believe so.
Well, the oil and gas sector is not an endemic sector. So let's not say because of the challenge we had in the sector that the sector is now endemic. No. Their deals are valuable, and when we find the good deals, will we do them? The answer is yes, we'll do them. So the whole concept is that we must ensure that for as long as we go into the sector, because of the volatility of the commodity price that nobody can predict, we'll make sure that we get the necessary comfort and hedges in place to insulate us from any eventual risk associated with sharp commodity decline. That is clearly the way to go. So there are inquiries, there are opportunities, so we'll continue to take them on. The PSB, like Tokwe mentioned, where we need to compete, we'll compete. We are not scared to compete fiercely. We are known to be very combative when it comes to competition. And where we need to collaborate, we'll collaborate. If we also need to be creative, we'll be creative. So we welcome it. We are not scared about it. It's something we welcome, and it will keep us on our toes.
Okay. And just one more question just on that, on the non-performing loans of the oil and gas book. It was roughly 40 billion at the end of December 2018 and now roughly 25 billion. That shift from 40 to 25, was most of that just, did that become performing or was there some write-offs on that as well?
Well, essentially we'll speak to that. I think we spoke to that before. Yeah. Is the fact that when we have a situation, once you've fully provided for a loan over a period of one year, 2 years, you can write it off. But that doesn't foreclose follow-up on recovery. So what we've done essentially, the movement you see there is the fact that already fully provided items were now written off.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Segun Akinwale from ARM Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Okay. Hello. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Please, can you speak up?
Okay. Thank you. I just have a few questions around your key lines, specifically your non-interest revenue. I'm actually going to, it's going to be around your electronic and trading income, because based on what I can see, they accounted for the larger part of the increase you saw in your NIR. I just want to speak to the treasury bill trading part of it. What are you looking at this line going into the rest of the year? And is this something we're likely to see a write-off? What was happening to that? Because I know CB trading was about 43 billion in Q2 alone. So I just want your clarity on what really happened on that line. And also your electronic banking income. I just want to know what is the persistence of this line and what should we expect going forward?
Yeah, thank you, Segun. For electronic banking, it's coming likely from the intensity of our retail banking journey and implementation. So we are quite happy with what we've achieved, and the reception we are getting from the market is so encouraging. So will we continue to intensify our efforts? The answer is a big yes. In terms of the T-bills, I think Mukhtar explained it. I'll get him to explain it again, because you have a situation where the earnings from the T-bills income are sitting in two different buckets. Mukhtar.
Okay, yeah. In terms of the trading treasury bills and the treasury bills income generally, for the trading treasury bills, I explained earlier that it's driven by revaluation. So you can't easily predict. Okay, please, can you go off speaker? It's echoing here.
No, I'm not on speaker.
Okay. So for the trading treasury bills, it's driven by trading. So the parameters that drive your trading will determine how much you are going to rake in for that income. The ones that you are carrying at held to maturity, you amortize the income over time. But if you are looking at the total income, comparing it to our total treasury bills holding, then you need to look at both the trading and the amortize, the one we are holding to maturity. So your question, should you expect that amount of trading income into the rest of the year? I explained earlier, even if the opportunity to make more trading treasury bills income is not there, the resources are still there. We are going to redeploy them elsewhere. So if you find out that that line of income is dropping, I am assuring you that you will find another line of income that will compensate that drop. That is the assurance that we are given.
Okay, why I'm asking that question is if you see over Q2, your T-bills, or that's the one under interest income, which I believe is the one you are referring to as amortized, then the one on trading is different. So there was a CV, there was a net off, so the one on trading went up. The one on amortized level actually went down. So I'm asking, did you move your assets from, say, HTM to trading? So I just want to know if anything was done around treasury bills in the asset book.
Not moving assets. When assets mature, you roll over. At the point that you roll over, depending on the market condition, you know that in Q2, the yield, the treasury bills, the rates were low. So if you are rolling over and you put them in trading, you have benefit of getting the mark-to-market gain, at the same time getting the discount, the interest or whatever it is. So you make that decision when you are rolling over, but not to move from one bucket to another because the market direction has changed. No.
Okay, all right. So just a second question. I noticed your CASA was down to, I think, 61 now. Just want to get what led to that, why did it decline? Because you mentioned the retail side of the market, the electronic side of the market is growing, but you're seeing your current and savings account dropping at the same time. So in Q2, it was 63%, but now it's at 61%. Can you just keep what happened on that end?
The CASA, break it down. The savings account of the CASA increased. It is the current account that dropped. And most of the balances on the current account revolve around large corporates that have significant balances that do transactions. The more they do transactions, the more you see those ones sometimes going out and coming back. But you will see consistent growth in our savings account, which is the real retail, what the retail is driving. So it's better to really look at the savings account separate and look at the current account separate.
All right, thank you. So just to before, I don't know if you've mentioned this before, but the jump in cost of risk over Q2, can you specify which exact sector is coming from or what really happened to that line?
The jump in cost of risk. Okay, we have to make provision generally. Yes, we have to make provision across different lines, largely the manufacturing sector. We have some few challenges there. We are not talking of one or two names. Okay, it's cut across different names that we have to make enhanced provision. Okay, because we always want to be prudent. Once we have any signal of non-performing, we take the provision on. But you are not going to see more provision coming into the remaining half of the year. And then also, we are keeping our 1% guidance because we are very optimistic that the loan book is going to grow. So with a stable impairment and a growth in the loan book, the cost of risk is going to trend down in the remaining part of the year.
Okay, so lastly, I just want to, your loan-to-deposit ratio, the value we currently have, I just want to know, was that adjusted for the 1.4 times that was given to retail and consumer credit? So I'm seeing for the bank, I'm seeing you putting up 62% here. I just want to know, is this after making adjustments for the 1.5% for balance?
It's adjustment for 1.5%. Of
the 1.5 times value that was put on.
No. There's no that adjustment is by CBN.
So it's not for us. What you have is the absolute position of our loan book.
Okay. All right. Thanks. So just this is just to get your sense around what is happening within this sector. I don't know if you so I just want to get your view on, do you think the extension of the CBN on the meeting the deadline for the 60%, do you think it's something that will be extended or is something CBN will stick to coming September? So that's and also on the loan to funding, do you think is the next step that CBN will be looking at taking, or do you think they are going to stop on LDR alone?
Well, if you ask me, I wish we could predict the direction of regulation. We'll be very happy if we can predict it then. We don't know what will happen, but what we know is that regulation by itself is never, you don't see sophistication in regulation. It challenges you. It pulls you out of your comfort zone. So, but what we try to do is ensure that, first and foremost, compliance. Compliance is critical to us, and we are an institution that builds scenarios, different scenarios over different circumstances, different situations. And already at the beginning of the year, in one of our scenario buildings, what came out clearly was that there was need for us to grow the loan book. So in a way, what CBN is asking us to do aligns completely with our own strategic agenda. So if they decide to shift the date or they decide to change the model, whatever they want to do, the critical thing is that our objective will be compliance. We will pursue compliance. We will just be watching out. And it's also for us to adapt very quickly, you know, and we have that capability to be able to adapt and move in the direction that the regulation is going. So if you have a sense of what CBN will do, we don't mind, you let us know.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And the last question comes from the line of Kathleen Byrne from Prudential. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to understand with your coverage, your NPL coverage seems higher than peers. So what would be the reason for this? Do you have less collateral? Is it just being conservative? And then earlier you also mentioned that in the communication sector there were new NPLs, but they'd already been written off. Are there any other loans which have been provided for but are not in your NPLs? Thanks.
Okay, Mukta.
Okay, coverage. You want to know why our coverage is higher than peers. Okay, so coverage is a reflection of your level of prudency in terms of making provision when you see loan is challenged. Our coverage ratio is around 145%. Once we have a coverage ratio above 100, what it means is the potential bad loans in the system, we have provision to cover everything. We're very comfortable with that. Sometimes it goes below that amount, below 100%, when you have very marketable and sellable collaterals that you can easily fall back on to recover. But as we are now, over 100% coverage, we're very comfortable, and we'd always want to have buffer for our coverage ratio. And communication sector, yes, we have loans that have been fully provided for that is classified under the NPL. So that's what has happened in the communication sector, as explained earlier. Are there loans that have been provided for that are not in NPL? Yes, there are different levels of provisioning. Sometimes you can do 2% level of provisioning because you have seen a potential challenge in the loan, not that it is actually challenged, so you provide for it. There are some times that you also see that a particular loan, for example, under IFRS, we have some loans that are watchlist. You are watching them very, very critically to see whether they are going to be NPL. In IFRS, we put them under stage 2. But that doesn't mean they are NPLs. You are watching them carefully. So you have those kind of classifications that are not in your NPL.
Thank
Understood.
You.
Thanks very much.
As there are no further questions, I'll hand it back to the speaker.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. In closing, we like to reassure you that under this new management of Zenith Bank, we will continue to stay true to our values, our culture of focus, discipline, integrity, determination. We will ensure that values are not destroyed, but instead we will build incremental value in the system. We will continue to hold on to our share of the corporate segment and even increase our market share. And our journey in the retail space will intensify. The whole target will be to see that the proportion of retail in terms of our deposit and loan book is increased appreciably. In the same manner, our expectation is that we intensify our drive to increase the fees and commission on our electronic products and the non-interest income. We expect that we should be able to consolidate our position in the market as a leading institution. We thank you very much and assure you that Zenith remains a very, very compelling investment proposition, which we welcome everyone that you should be interested in and look into it intensely. Thank you.
This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.